Cancer Society dinner in Baltimore honoring I.H. Hammerman on September 27, 1970. Vice President Agnew.
I told him When I went back in the service in 1950 at a loss, I had nothing to do with it.
Service you've made in the country outside of this community. And I'm
proud of the fact that you asked me to present you with this award. So, Phil, without going any further, if I may have the award, I'd like to present it and to read the inscription on it. Thank you.
This matter straight and really brought it into proper perspective. The Springdale Realty Company at the present time has four houses. Over the last 12 years, from 1958 to 1970, according to the information I've received in the last day or so, there was a total of 10 properties that company had and owned. I became connected with it in 1958. I was an attorney practicing law, which is my profession and my business, my only business. In about 1964, I wanted to disassociate myself from the operation of the company, first because there was no profit. I never received one penny profit, never drew a salary, never got any profit, never received any income from the realty company. I approached my partner with the corporation, the Springdale Realty Company, and told him that I wanted to withdraw. At that time, there was no way for me to withdraw. He could not, because of his own financial situation, do anything about buying my stock. By 1968, I was so disgusted with it that I gave my stock, all that the interest that I had, to Mr. Gilbert, in return for which he gave me a release from any responsibility or any liability for any of the interest. I have a copy of it here. I have a copy, and I'd like to read where it says that upon acceptance of this agreement, it says Sylvan Gilden and Lillian Gilden, his wife, agree to release and forever discharge Arvin Mandel from any and all claims, suits, or causes of action or any kind whatsoever, the standard release that any lawyer would prepare for a client. I was totally out of it. Filed with the State Tax Commission in their files was a letter from me at that time indicating that I was out of it, and also filed with the Baltimore City Department of Housing was a letter. The same people who went up and checked those files and got the reports that you saw in the paper also have to see those letters in the files because they're there right now. So that anyone, if they wanted to be fair in this situation, had to know that there was on record at the State Tax Commission and the City Property Bureau a release, a letter from me indicating that I was no longer associated with it.
Mr. Blair, does this satisfy your charge, sir?
No, not exactly. And since I made the charge, I'd like to respond, if I may, to what the governor has said. What I did was the basis on certain facts, which are right there in the public record. I'd like to mention what they were, so that there's no question, and for people to compare what the governor said and what I'm saying. First of all, the governor and a member of his family, along with one other gentleman, were incorporated in this company in 1958, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. The company was incorporated for the purpose of buying, selling, leasing, and transferring real estate. It did acquire what I believe to be 15 properties, and I've so indicated in the release that I put out, up through 1970. It currently holds 5 of those, and the governor is quite correct when he says 4 of them are houses, 1 is not. Now, the governor has said that in 1968, he divested himself of any interest. So therefore, from 1958 to 1968, I think there's no question, and by his own statement, he was associated with the company. The question becomes, what happened in 1968? All I know for a fact is that there is a document filed, and as the governor has one, so do I, for the State Department of Assessments and Taxation in 1970, August the 20th to be exact. And it says, I declare under the penalties of perjury that the information is true and correct. It's signed by the treasurer, or at least reports to be, and lists the governor of Maryland as the president of the company. Now, the gentleman who signed that is now saying 1 month later that it was incorrect, and indeed it was not his signature. I see that he says it was his wife's signature, who in turn says it couldn't be her signature because she never signed for it. Now, what does all that mean? It means simply that there is, of record, the information I give you and a considerable dispute of what the governor said. I thought about it. I don't want to be unfair to him. He says he did not make any money out of this company. He says that he sold his stock for $5 in 1968. And he purchased it for $3,500 in 1958. Therefore, he obviously suffered a capital loss. And he's a lawyer. And if, in fact, there is a capital loss, I would think, being a lawyer, he would recognize that and so take a deduction on his federal income tax. So I'm saying to the governor, if that is the case, and he would care to produce the federal income tax copies for the years in which he was admittedly involved in the company, I think that would put it to rest. And so that I won't be entirely unfair, I'll offer to do the same thing for the same period of time.
Well, I don't think that Mr. Blair can produce any capital loss for the Springdale Realty Company for the same period of time. You know, and
my
I don't quite understand his record.
My
the
income.
Point is, and I think what we're doing here now, and what has happened in the last few days, is an attempt to divert an argument from a point that was attempting to be made when the charge was made. When the charge was originally made, the statement was that I had deliberately concealed from my disclosure of my assets an interest in the Springdale Realty Company. Now that has proven not to be a fact. So attempting to cover up a misstatement of fact, we now are clouding the issue with income tax. We're now clouding the issue with every other consideration other than the main point. And you gentlemen being reporters all know that was the statement that was made. If I'm correct, my opponent said when he made the statement that he saw nothing legally wrong, but the fact was that I hadn't disclosed this interest on my disclosure of my assets. Now all of a sudden the fact that it wasn't disclosed on my assets is no longer the argument. The argument is, well, is it on the income tax? Did you deduct it? Yes, I did deduct it. Because he's absolutely right, as an attorney, it was a capital loss. So there's no argument about that. And if that lays the argument to rest, I think the argument is laid to rest. Now,
Quinn.
I don't think, though, that the argument is laid to rest. For one simple reason, Mr. Guntz, I think it's time we made a point. I think we're engaged in a contest as to who should be governor of the state of Maryland. I think that contest ought to be based on facts.
How many people were there?
Of what we think we ought to do for the state of Maryland. Not getting into irrelevant arguments about questions of whether or not there was an ownership or not an ownership of some stock in a corporation. I think these are the questions that I would like to answer. What about the state of Maryland? What about its fiscal condition? What about our proposals for the future? These are the questions.
Mr. Quinn, I think we'll go on and like to come back to you. We'll come back later. Mr. Quinn, do you have a question?
Governor, when you divested yourself of your interest in the Springdale Company, was it with any...
I thought you were going in a new direction, Mr. Quinn, but apparently you're not.
Well, I want to clear this up. Was there was any talk or suspicion that continuing interest in that company might be politically dangerous or damaging to you?
Absolutely not. In the first place, and when I divested myself, I had no idea or even any question that I would ever be a governor of the state of Maryland. It was long before that ever became a matter of possibility. And, there was no...
Why?
No intention. The only reason I got
we're fighting
out of it and wanted to get out of
it
3 years before I actually did was that, one, there was no future in it. There was no reason for me to be in it any longer. There was no interest in it for me. And I didn't participate in the affairs of the company, not on any occasion. I was an investor, period. Like there are many other investors in our audience today who don't participate in the affairs of the company. I never participated in that company.
I wonder if Dr. Merkel would like to referee this argument that's been going on. Have you been following this, Doctor?
With some attention.
I believe that we don't have to face this confrontation as a as necessarily ultimately impugning either the motives or the veracity of either of these gentlemen. Aside from one area, to whatever extent being a slum landlord is or is not culpable, I believe that stands proved. Beyond that, I'd like to recommend it on behalf of the interest of the voters in Maryland in more constructive things that these gentlemen repair together at some other time to compare notes and get it as straight as they can, and then if they have open questions, they can bring them back before the public.
I think it's an excellent suggestion, Dr. Merkel, and I am sure that the two gentlemen will come up with all of the necessary facts. Shall we drop that aspect of questioning for the time being, and let's go on to Mr. Hostetter.
For Dr. Merkel. Dr. Merkel, the Young Democrats in Maryland yesterday approved a party platform plank calling for the busing of students between school districts as a method of promoting equal educational opportunities. Now, as governor, what would be your policy with respect to school busing between school districts?
And as far as the Democrats are concerned, anything that would not provide equal but better education, and then when better equal, I would be 100% unqualified in behalf of. I believe, however, that the bitter experience of the unscientifically tested experimentation of the past years has shown, as always, that you can't purify impure water by adding pure water. It merely contaminates the pure water. That when you have a lesser educational achievement level, regardless of the cause, or regardless of the faction or part of society in which that exists, you merely lower the whole when you mix. So I don't think that busing has in any way proved itself as far as improving the educational stimulus or the educational performance. And secondly, you have then the problem of the animosity that has developed. Even though we failed to scientifically test any of these things, although we've had science around for several hundred years, and we went pell-mell into these vast social changes with perfectly legitimate objectives, we then have the grand test tube of the nationwide experiment, and we must face the fact that after these 15 years of progress, we're not as far forward as we were when we began the progress. Where there was love, there's hate. Where there was peace, there's war. I'd like to take one further moment to establish my portfolio in this area. In 1956, I entered South Carolina as a private practitioner of medicine. In Pickens County, a county which spawned Bobby Baker, which bragged on being the whitest county in the South, the county which also seceded from South Carolina and the nation 6 months before South Carolina seceded. In that county, I opened the first common waiting room for white and black in the state of South Carolina that I know of. I took the dead chickens on my lawn, usually once a week, buckshot in the mailbox, the cross burned across the road. My life threatened. I'd rather not yield the floor, but I finish this little statement. My life threatened five times, and I stuck to my guns. I believe in the freedom of the individual to do as he thinks proper. The colored, underprivileged have been a heartfelt, ardent goal of mine at all times in my life. I'm not speaking as a racist, anything but. I've been thrown out of one hospital for taking up for the rights of the color. But in this question, many of my black friends tell me there's a majority that agree that they see the bad results of this experiment as hatred instead of love.
The question, Dr. Merkel, and Mr. Hofstadter will continue in a moment, but we're going to take a brief pause here for these announcements.
People have a way of knowing what works for them, especially medicine.
Hofstadter, did you want to proceed with
Dr.
Merkel?
Dr. Merkel, thank you.
Incidentally, Mr. Hofstadter is the publisher of some five newspapers on the Eastern Shore, the state of Maryland. Mr. Newsom of the Afro-Americans, we're glad to have you with us tonight. Do you have a question for one of our candidates?
Yes, I have a question for all three. And the question is this. A major complaint in the black communities across the state is the problem that there is a feeling that no governor has ever given the black community a fair number of appointments. There's also the problem of hiring and promoting by state agencies. And I would like to know if either of you gentlemen have some sort of priority plan to try to rectify this situation.
Well, let's start on the left and go down the line. Mr. Blair?
I think Mr. Newsom is essentially correct in its premise. The difficulty has been, I think, finding people who were willing to take the positions and had the experience that was necessary. I think they're there. I think there should be a genuine effort to find. Certainly we have within the executive department the opportunity to train people and bring them along to positions of responsibility. And I think it's absolutely important that black and white alike find an opportunity in our system to work.
Governor Mandel?
Mr. Newsom, when I became governor, I found that situation did exist. There's no question about it. One of the first things we did is to change the employment policy. We had a Department of Personnel change their policy so that there would be no discrimination in employment. The second thing we did was to have a group of meetings set up with each department agency supervised by the Department of Personnel to work with the agency people to train them in the new methods of hiring and the ways of hiring. As far as my own appointments are concerned, I've always tried as governor to make those appointments on the basis of qualification and the basis of ability. Now, for example, I appointed Mr. Taylor in Prince George's County, the judge on the bench in Prince George's County. First time the judge has been appointed, a black judge outside of the city of Baltimore. I didn't appoint him because of that. Because I appointed him because his ability and because he was recommended very highly by the Bar Association. And I think they just indicated how good their choice was. He was just reelected. But aside from that, we've instituted a whole series of meetings, a whole series of new personnel hiring programs in order to cope with the problem of discrimination, and not only discrimination in one form. but discrimination in any form. This is presently taking place.
Are you satisfied with the progress being made?
I think there is great progress being made, but I think we have to keep a constant check to make sure that the system is working.
Dr. Merkel?
Any system can be beaten. Any law can be beaten, as we know. I can speak from my record that my chief nurse in my clinic and prior to my experience at Clinton Hospital and in the St. Charles Clinic at the Clinton Hospital is Marion Gray, who is black. I have an unspotted record at the hospital of being colorblind. I have a most admired group of blacks who worked at the Maryland State School for Boys. I've never seen a greater assemblage of responsible, good-hearted people. I think in my position as governor, I would rely upon them to a great extent for recommendation and judgment. That's as much as I can tell you. If two employees were equal in ability, I would give the job to the lesser privileged economically employee, whether that person were white or black.
I have a series of questions that have come in from our viewers, and they are addressed to various candidates, and so I will address them that way. Governor Van Dutt, if certain irregularities can be proven as regards to primary election, would you advocate a new election, either in whole or in part?
If irregularities amounting to illegal activities are proven, I think that a new election would be in order. However, let me say this. The only one that could do that would be a court of law. No one, including the governor or any official of the state, has the right to order a new election. That must be done through a court of law.
Mr. Blair, question from a viewer. Why so far does your campaign consist mostly of attacks on the governor and not issues?
Well, I don't agree that that's the case.
It's a question from a viewer.
Right, and I'm responding to the viewer. What I'm using is facts, and the attacks that I'm making, if they seem to be attacks, and I think I've stated my position on a great number of issues. And I'm sorry that viewer hasn't been listening, but I continue and will continue to do so throughout the campaign.
Governor Mandel, why did you wait until after the primary election to endorse Senator Tidings?
Senator Tidings and I met before the primary election. An election is no different, I think, than any game that you play. When I talk about that, I'm talking about football, baseball. There's certain ways that you handle both primaries and general elections. The feeling was that the general election was the election where he had his great concern, and that's where he wanted the most support. And that's where he's going to get it.
Thank you. Dr. Merkel, are you running as a Wallace candidate?
Absolutely. Wallace is the first projectile to penetrate the iron wall of one-body, two-headed politics in America, wherein the liberal faction has led us down a road of 40 years of progress and left us 40 years behind where we were when we began. And Wallace, as the opener in that, maker of the breach in that wall, is historically significant in America. I am not totally in agreement with Mr. Wallace in everything that he says or advocates, but I think he's performed a historic service in opening politics and giving the Maryland voters especially a choice for the first time in a generation.
Mr. Blair and Dr. Merkel, what do you plan to do about the airport?
What do I plan to do about
what
the airport?
What do you plan to do about the airport?
Are we talking about friendship?
I assume so.
I can best answer that.
It just says the airport.
Right. Well, assuming that it is friendship, I can best answer that, I think, by stating my basic disagreements with the idea that Baltimore City ought, anyway, at this point in time, to be owning and operating, even under the present circumstances, the airport. Now, I know the difficulty with the General Assembly that Governor Mandel has had and Governor Agnew has had, but that's how I feel about it. I don't think the City of Baltimore ought to be the business of operating that airport now.
So you think it should be operated by the state?
I definitely do.
Dr. Merkel, how do you feel about it?
Straighten the situation out.
Governor Mandel, are you going to support the black candidates in the election?
Absolutely. As I've said on many occasions, the Democratic primary is always a healthy situation. the winners of that primary are the Democratic candidates, and I intend fully to support the winners of the primary.
This to each candidate. Then we'll go on to our representatives of the media for some more questions. What stand will you take in November or leading up to November on the prayer in school question? Mr. Blair?
The stand that I've already expressed is the one I would take. Under the law, and I don't think very many people understand this, there is ample opportunity to have prayers in public schools, and I don't think this is understood. What the Supreme Court did was to say that you couldn't have an established prayer by the government put upon the institution. I think that was a correct decision, and yet at the same time, I think there ought to be prayer in public schools, so can be. I would simply encourage the full use of the opportunity that exists.
Governor Mandel?
I think what the court did and what the court said is that we cannot mandatorily order the prayers in public school. They said that that would be unconstitutional. But as just been said, it can be done on a basis where the schools freely, voluntarily would do it. I did it when I was a youngster. I saw no harm in having a prayer in public school. But the court has said it's unconstitutional, that we as state officials can't order it. We're bound by the court's decision.
Dr. Merkel?
In view of our desperate situation on all fronts, I will encourage prayer every place without violating the law and so ordering saints. I will leave prayer in the public schools if given the opportunity. Basically, I intend to desocialize the public schools. It was our first great venture into socialism and has been a miserable failure if you realize we're spending $734 per child, primary and secondary grade, average in the United States, per year. A handsome profit with raised teachers' pay and much less boondoggling and political involvement could be realized with that much money per child, especially if in the initial phase the certificates were given to the parents to withhold upon receipt of satisfaction from the school of their children.
Mr. Hanrahan of the Washington Post, do you have a question?
I believe this would be for the governor and for Mr. Blair. Regarding Mr. Blair's former association with Vice President Agnew and former Governor Agnew, do you feel, Governor, first of all, that Mr. Blair is merely a stand-in for the Vice President in this race, and then Mr. Blair can respond to that?
I think that this is a question that has to be answered by the candidate. I don't think that I can say whether or not he, by his own choice, would assume that position. I think he has to answer that, and I think he has to demonstrate that by his actions during the election. I don't think it's a question that I can answer.
If you can respond, I'd be very happy to. There's no question that it was my choice. There's no question I have a strong desire to do it. And I think people lose sight of the fact that I've been in politics a little longer, for example, than they may remember, including 2 years longer than the Vice President of the United States from the standpoint of seeking public office. I have a record in Maryland. This is my choice, and I'm running as Stan Blair, not as Spiro Agnew.
Would you review your record briefly?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I've served in county government for 3 years in the 20th capacity. I've served in the legislature for 4 years in elected capacity, 2 years as Secretary of State of Maryland, again as appointed capacity, and a year and a half or 18 months close to it at the White House, presidential appointee as chief of staff to the vice president. So I think it gives me a range of feeling for government and an understanding of its machinery. Does that answer your question, Mr. Hanrahan?
Okay. May I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Do you expect the support of the Vice President of the United States in your campaign?
You asking me, Mr. Gunn?
No, I was asking you. I was looking at you to see what reaction you would have, but I was asking the question.
I do think you're asking. Well, let's say I'm hoping for it, Mr. Gunn, without question, and I think I have.
Thank you. Mr. Dill, Associated Press, and then I'll get to you, Mr. Newsom. Mr. Blair, if you are elected governor of Maryland, well, first of all, I would presume that you spent a good number of hours reviewing the incumbent and what he's done and what he is. If you're elected governor of Maryland, what will you do that he hasn't? How will you be a better governor than he has been?
I think the answer to that question, Mr. Dill, it turns on what you see as the need. What do you see as the need for Maryland, for example? I think it's a question of leadership. I think it's a question of Governor Mandel coming out of one school of politics and becoming out of another. I think we're facing the 70s with a background challenge, and that challenge is, are we going to be able to make our institutions of government work, and are we going to be able to gain the confidence of people in those institutions? This is where I have been critical as the lady indicated, of Governor Mandel, because I feel, and feel sincerely, however critical it may seem to him, that he is a governor of compromise and consensus. Now, I can give you a bit of particulars on this, but what I'm going to try to do is to be resolute in getting some things done for Maryland without compromise, and, for example, in the field of pollution, where I don't think you can share your authority with the counties and expect to combat pollution in the airs and waters of this state. I'd like to take the state on new direction, and I'd like to take it on the direction of genuine reform, which I do not think we've gotten under Governor Mandel. With all due respect, I think we've gotten reorganization in the name of reform.
Mr. Newsom.
May I make comment on that?
Yes, sir, Governor. I think that the candidate just told us of his background in government and his experience in government and the time he spent as Secretary of State. I didn't see any of these things that he's talking about taking place during that period of time. In fact, when I became governor, we had to pick up a stagnated government and make it move forward again. I think the record during that term of office that the past Secretary of State served ought to be an indication of the kind of government that people can look for if he returns to the same. Mr. Newsom?
In relation to Vice President Agnew, he's been saying some pretty strong things about some of the candidates around the country. And I'm wondering whether his all-out support of you means that you see eye to eye on most issues. And if there are some major issues where you disagree with him, if you could mention a couple of them.
I think you're right again, Mr. Newsom. He does speak out strongly, and of course, in doing so, creates some hard feelings in some instances. The part of your question as to whether I agree with him on most issues, the answer is definitely yes. I may express them differently, and probably would, because I don't have his capacity for rhetoric, for one thing. But there's no question that I share or feel a rapport on his philosophical beliefs. Now, when you get around to his personal expression, that's his own. I'll stick with mine.
Mr. Hofstetter, do you have a question?
Mr. Blair, you had mentioned reform. Do you have any thing in particular in mind with respect to tax reform? We have been going into increasingly larger and larger governmental budgets, not only in Maryland, but across the entire nation in recent years. Would you have any new approach to taxation, or would you go along with the old system, just increase that?
No, I would hope, Mr. Hofstetter, that if you really reform things, you can somehow make them more efficient. And I'm not going to be brazen enough to say that brings taxes down, but they don't go up as high. The example and case in point that I'm thinking about is reorganizing the executive branch, which had 240 boards, agencies, commissions. And after we reorganized it in the name of reform, it still has 240 boards, agencies, and commissions. I think you could do a better job of streamlining and structuring than that. On the other side, with respect to taxes, I don't know what the prospect is in terms of how soon we're going to need a tax increase. But the point that I've made, and I'll make again on this program tonight, is I do not favor the type of tax that Governor Mandel put through, which was the sales tax, increased it by 33 1/3%. And I don't think there's any reform in that. I don't think there's any equity in taxation. I think he has thrown $63 million worth of burden on the fixed income person. And I think this is a step in the wrong direction. I know it's a step in the opposite direction than one Governor Agnew had taken in progressive taxation.
Yes, Governor. On that, Mr. Hofstetter. The candidate again has said that in the name of reorganization, we reorganized the state government, reorganized 240 agencies. Mr. Blair was a member of that commission who made the recommendation for the reorganization. I have a copy of it right here, Executive Reorganization. The first signature on the page that signed this report was Honorable C. Stanley Blair. And if he would have looked at the report, and I'd like to read from the report, which he signed, as to how the reorganization should be accomplished. And on page 25, it says, in every case, the committee recommends that the placement of departments, agencies, boards, commissions, and all other units of the executive branch in the principal departments be accomplished with as little disruption or immediate internal change of such units as possible and appropriate. Now, we did reorganize those with as little disruption at the time of reorganization as possible. However, since the principal departments have been reorganized, there has been an internal adjustment. For example, in the Department of Natural Resources, that had 5 agencies has now been reduced to 4, eliminating any of the problems that we were having where 2 agencies were doing the same kind of work, also eliminating or combining offices around the state into one office so that we did away with the expense. The same thing has been done in the health department.